Chapter 1. Fortress Manhattan. Outside my window, the little town of Manhattan buzzed with excitement because President Nixon would soon be speaking on campus. A large crowd gathered around the doors of Ahern Fieldhouse. Townsfolk in church clothing strolled sidewalks, anticipating the presidential helicopter. Network camera crews carried equipment through police lines into the fieldhouse. The morning sun shone through blue skies on a warm day in September 1970. But it was not your typical day at Kansas State University. A huge array of ominous-looking military equipment from Fort Riley. Olive-drab jeeps, canvas-topped troop carriers, armored vehicles and helicopters were gathering across from the field house on a big grassy field surrounded by tall, woven wire fencing. In front sat ambulances, police cars, and a few big black sedans. Looking out of place and moving slowly through the dark army equipment rumbled one bright red fire truck, churning with a deep diesel voice cutting through the air. Authorities were preparing for anything. Officials felt extremely apprehensive about a presidential appearance on a university campus amid the violent anti-war protests happening around the country. Only 4 months before, the National Guard had shot and killed four students at Kent State, launching incredible national outrage. Then, the news of Nixon's secret Cambodian invasion became a public relations disaster, igniting violent protests again. Student demonstrators in San Jose stoned the presidential car. Nerves were frayed in America. Distrust of police, the president, and authority in general had reached all-time levels. The Vietnam War and protests dominated the news, bringing it into living rooms every evening. Nixon wanted to look strong and to change the idea that students had turned against him and the war. He and his party desperately needed a political win before the midterm elections. His nationally televised speech had to come off without a hitch. From my third floor window, I watched an oversized army truck pull slowly onto the wet field, its huge tires digging deep, muddy ruts into the turf. Recently, I'd been watching the football team practicing on the field, but now they'd surely need to find a different place. The huge truck moved slowly and stopped in a clearing away from other vehicles. Could it be heavy with guns and ammo? As another canvas-topped troop truck stopped, a dozen soldiers in combat uniforms emerged. Soldiers wandered through the equipment. Some watched college students in bell bottoms on the other side of the chain-link fence. I thought about the young men on each side of the fence, a college life with colorful clothing, variety, freedom, and romance on my side. And on the other side, the scheduled, disciplined, repetitive, and dangerous life in an olive-green uniform. I could do whatever I pleased, but just had to make decent grades to avoid getting drafted and end up on the other side of the fence. Then I could be sent to Vietnam to kill or be killed. We lived completely different lives, but we were the same ages and we went to the same schools. Many were not there by choice. My best friend Alan skipped college and got drafted. He underwent artillery training and got shipped off to Vietnam just a month earlier. My older brother Earl became draft eligible, and my veteran father told him that in the Navy at least you'll get 3 meals and a dry bunk on a ship. So Earl enlisted. But it didn't work out as hoped. The Navy assigned him to combat duty on a Jungle River gunboat. Just 12 days before Nixon showed up, my brother shipped off for the most dangerous job in the war. From my window, the scene below looked surreal. My design studio sat directly across from both the rutted, grassy field and the field house, so I could see the whole show from my drafting table. I had just begun my 4th year of landscape architecture studies. I'd become completely distracted by the chaotic, dramatic event unfolding below.